Mic check one, checking mic one.
Check two, good, all right. Guest mic.
Check three. How do I set, do I need it closer?
Yeah, you got to get kind of close. You can pull it out and hold it if that makes you feel better, like whatever this is fine. You're comfortable
I'll just,
doing.
I'll just, get, I'll just get up on it.
Kevin's got a good voice. The board is happy.
The
board is happy.
Yeah, I like to please the machines.
A lot of times the board doesn't like the voice. I tried first, kissing hands across the land, waiting for the show with Chris and Graham. Comedy Film Nerds. Comedy Film Nerds Podcast. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Comedy Film Nerds, episode 243. I don't know. I came up hot. I don't know.
You did. No, it was good. Well, it's, you know, it's retail season.
Oh, God. Black Friday.
Yeah. Well, it was Cyber Monday.
It was Cyber Monday.
Yeah, I bought a bunch of stuff.
I hope.
From Skynet.
Really? From Skynet?
Cyber Monday. Yeah. Here's what, shipping. How are you going to?
Here's how I celebrate Cyber Monday. I sit in the comfort of my own home.
Mm-hmm.
But then I still go out and punch someone, like my neighbor, and fight for them, like when the mail comes in, just because I don't want to miss the experience of acting like a goddamn asshole at a store.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. everyone's like, oh, you don't get punched in the face, but that's part of the fun.
Sure.
Of going to
You're going to go to Walmart and not get trampled?
Yeah, I want to trample. I want to kick someone smaller and weaker than me to save $10.
Of course. Of course.
Rip off some Christmas lights.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just yank them.
Oh, God. I used to do that as a kid. I was a vandal. Wow. I was an awful vandal.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we were the snowballs of cars kind of kids and then smashing things.
Mm. Eggs?
Oh, yeah. Egg people's houses, sure. TP'd. Mm-hmm. This is unsupervised children.
Yeah, chaos.
Chaos, yeah. Divorced parents. That's what happens in the 70s.
Maybe you were acting out a little?
Nah. I think there's a lot of assholes out there had it coming with their nice houses.
And their eggless cars.
Their eggless cars. Your car needs some protein, motherfucker.
Yeah. It's good for the sheen.
Eggs actually are great for the paint on your car.
For getting that paint off.
Yeah, it is. You got
not
a nice...
like yourself. Not like you're throwing Diet Coke.
No, I'm not being a dick.
Yeah,
it's eggs. It's natural.
It's a healthy breakfast.
Yeah,
it is. I'm getting.
And everybody needs
it's a cage-free egg that I'm chucking at your happy home.
Oh man.
So Merry Christmas, everybody. Yeah. I guess is what I'm saying.
Merry Christmas.
We're going to talk about The Imitation Game, Horrible Bosses 2, Nightbreed, The Director's Cut, The Theory of Everything, and we've got a new guest that's never been on the program before.
Never been on the program, and just reached out and emailed me, said I listen to the show and I want to be on it.
Another New York gentleman.
New York gentleman who, as we said before the show, New York comics that you know me. This gentleman doesn't even know me, and he emailed and said, "Can I be on your show?" I've told so many fucking New York comics that I'm friends with.
Yeah.
Hey, when you're in LA, let us know. We'll have you on the show.
Sure.
And they're dicks.
I've done the same thing.
And they're dicks. And I'm going to go to New York and I'm going to egg all their apartments.
Of and course. Nice fancy cars.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
All those comedians with their fancy, fancy cars. Egg those comedians, Rolls Royces.
That's how they live in New York. Yeah. They're all in.
Yeah, try to get the driver, too.
Yeah, fuck you.
Egg a subway train.
Yeah. I'm going to egg their monthly pass, I guess, in New York. Because that's how they're getting around in New York. Wait a minute. Let's introduce our guest first.
A writer for the John Oliver Show.
Writer for the John Oliver Show has a new podcast that we can't wait to discuss a little bit later on.
Originally
in the show.
From San Francisco.
And a comic as well.
Yeah.
Kevin Avery.
Hey there, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Sure, man.
I think the first thing we need to mention is what Kevin is wearing.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Well, the cool is objective because I got made fun of this for this as I was walking out of the house today. But I'm wearing an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hoodie, and it's got the S.H.I.E.L.D. insignia on the breast here and on the back, and then it's reversible. And this is where people really throw their heads back and either point and laugh or high five, but it's Hail Hydra on the back.
It's reversible.
You're in a safe place, dude.
Yeah. I know. I feel like I'm with my people.
This is
depending on what mood you're in. Yeah. You know, you put Inside or Out.
I have all the writers on Last Week Tonight walking around saying Hail Hydra to each other. Like, they've bought into it. I feel like I've done my job for King and Country. Excellent. So I'm quite proud.
You are doing the Lord's work.
I'm trying.
Say Hail Hydra. You got that at Comic-Con?
I did. This was my one big nerd Comic-Con purchase.
Was it like $600?
It was $100.
Yeah.
It was
So $50 aside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I bought two hoodies that day.
Yeah, really?
Why am I complaining?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I got a little.
And you got a Punchline Comedy Club shirt on underneath that.
Yeah. Wow. Good. Yeah.
Nice to have that shirt.
I have several. That was sort of my home club. That's where I came up in San Francisco. So.
That's a great club, by the way.
It's so fun.
It's one of those clubs that. First of all, any club that's been around a while and has a history behind it and all these great acts have come out of there, there's just a vibe about a club like that.
It's a beautiful club, too.
It's a beautiful club.
Inside. They really don't do it right.
It's so intimate. The layout of that club, it seats 2-something, but it feels like a 70-seat theater.
Like a 99-seat
like a Black Box theater. It feels like that.
Yeah. I mean, you're right there with everyone. And guess what? They like comedy.
Yeah,
it's not a Chevy's that also does comedy. You know what I mean? We've all been in that.
But who books that Chevy's gig? By the way,
we'll talk.
They do Marie Callender's. It's a whole
tour. Oh, sweet. The Chevy's Marie Callender's. It's not a Chevy's that does comedy. I laughed and then also had my skin start to itch.
Yeah.
Because I've done that gig 1,000 times.
Well, that's the funny thing about it. I say that as a joke, but it's also kind of literally true. Like, I think we've all done those restaurant gigs.
Absolutely.
Where you're just like, all right. And some of them have, I think, it wasn't a Chevy. I think like a Red Lobster. I've performed at a Red Lobster.
Sure. Of course. And the thing about... And
again, it's not like that's surprising to anyone in this room.
No.
Like, oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, you just do it and...
Yeah, why not?
When you're coming up,
get a free salad bar's included in the gig.
Yeah, you get a free meal. You can order anything but lobster.
Yeah, and you get $50 bucks and a salad. And when you're a 23-year-old comic,
it'll work.
It's like winning the lottery.
Yeah. All those places, like Borders Books. You ever do?
Oh, I used to book Borders Books.
You booked the Borders Books.
For real?
Yeah, 10 years.
And we would get $25
gift certificate for books.
That was kind of awesome because, I would do that and they'd hand. And at first you're like, we're not getting paid. You're paying. And then you'd get this thing and you'd be like, oh, I could just pick some shit out right now.
Yeah.
Like, that was awesome.
Yeah, it was great. And comics loved doing it. And then once the people that ran it, I mean, they went a lot of changeovers. But the first guy that ran it, he was so into having the comedy there. Like, even during Christmas, he gave me a bonus. He gave me, like, a $100 gift certificate just as a bonus. Hey,
well, dude, you
for
had, like,
it,
it was like, we, like,
oh, it was Patton Oswalt, Kathy Griffin. We had huge names
Paul
at the Borders Books.
There.
Yeah.
That's great.
I remember that was the gig, like, when you first moved to L.A.
Everyone did it. Yeah, yeah.
And you'd stand on there and look out the window on La Cienega.
Right, and see people drive by.
Yeah, and there'd be people enjoying the show, and always at least one person studying.
Yes, the one person looking at it from their computer or
like,
their
are you...
What is this? Okay, continue.
Yep. And then Frank Conniff started booking it with me, too, before he went to New York. It was really fun. And then, you know, they canceled the show, and then the chain collapsed. I'm not saying they're related.
No, they are. They absolutely are. Yeah. That show ending corrupted all of books.
Funny story about Frank. He worked at Totally Bias briefly when I was there, and I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn. He's been sober for a long time, and
that show made him drink. No, I'm just kidding.
I did because to this day, I feel terrible about this, but it was our first show of, like, I guess the second season, and we were having we did it moment, and I gathered all the writers into my office, and I, said, all right, let's toast, and I had whiskey, and I had ginger ale, and I told people, there's ginger ale here, and the writer's assistant was pouring some drinks, and everyone had their cup, and Frank took it. We all took a swig. Frank took one, and then I heard him say, oh my God, that's real alcohol, and then he... And we all thought he was doing a bit. leave. And we're all laughing, and he runs out of the room and spits it out. And I didn't know he had been sober.
Oh,
and I didn't know he picked up a glass of or a cup of real whiskey. And
so you just go to AA meetings and hand out Jello shots?
Basically. I bring donuts too. I'm not a total asshole.
Hey, you pussies, it's time to drink.
Felt so for weeks after that, I was like, Frank, are you okay? Is everything okay? How are you doing? I just felt so bad.
You called your sponsor, Frank?
Yeah.
You been going to meetings?
Everything? He was like, I'm fine. You know, whatever. But just when you said that name, I was like, oh, Frank. I hope he's doing well.
I'm so sorry.
God love Frank.
I'm so sorry.
So let's. We have one thing to announce, and then we'll get into the movies. A lot of movies to talk about. As you guys know, it is now shopping season, and we want to give you guys a discount at the Comedy Film Nerds store. So we created a coupon code. This will be good until January 1st.
10%
so
off. 10% Everything
off.
In the store.
Everything in the store. Even the earbuds pre-sales, even the downloads. And
T-shirts, CDs, anything.
Whatever you want. And the coupon code is I'm a cheap asshole.
So
if you type in I'm a cheap asshole, you'll get 10% off.
Can't forget that.
So we want to passive-aggressively tell you guys that we enjoy and appreciate you and then berate you for giving enjoying a sale that we created.
Yes.
Thanks for buying our stuff, you suck.
We're very passive-aggressive. So it's I'm a cheap asshole.
Yeah.
The American spelling.
The American spelling of asshole.
Oh, man.
So
10% off anything in the store.
And we appreciate you guys listening and supporting us for all these years.
Of course you do. Clearly.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So enjoy the coupon code.
Yeah, and Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra.
So now this is a movie, The Imitation
Game. Let's get
into it. I really, I was excited to see this. I haven't seen it yet, but you guys did, so I want to hear how it was.
Well, actually, all right. So you, Kevin, you saw this.
Am I the only one who saw it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
And I will see it eventually.
I saw it last night, and I wanted to like this movie. I was looking forward to it. Full disclosure, it'd been a long day, and I dozed off inside of the first 15 minutes. So the rest of the movie, I spent trying to put all the pieces together.
Like the Enigma code.
Yes, exactly. So I felt
so
very
much. You had to solve your own riddle.
Yeah. I was part of the film, you guys. Basically, my name came up in the credits at the end. I was like, look what I did. But it was, I did enjoy it. I was traveling. It was a long day. Yeah. But that being said, just right off, I enjoyed everyone's performances in the film. I'm a big Benedict Cumberbatch fan.
It's
I'm
hard not to be.
I'm one of the. I'm yeah. What are they? I'm a Cumberbitch, as they.
I hope that's a real thing.
I think that's what at one point that's what he said his fans were calling themselves. I was like, all right, whatever. Awesome. So count me in.
All right,
he's great. Matthew Good is really fun to watch. I liked him. He was he's done a bunch of stuff. I just know he was Ozymandias in Watchmen. And Keira, I like Keira Knightley, so I like, you know, so I enjoyed her. But everyone is really good in the film. The guy from Game of Thrones guy.
The guy that plays
the king,
Lannister.
Yeah, he's great. You have all these so there's never. It's always interesting on the screen, and I like the story. I like that World War II thing. I like the code breaking type of stuff, and that's interesting. It was just.
Do you like submarines?
I love submarine movies. Are you kidding me? I mean, there were some moments when they would cut away to
Charles Dance is the guy. That's the Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay,
dude,
yeah.
Who was Sardam Noonsby in the Golden Child? Yeah, I know this. I know Eddie Murphy.
Wow,
holy shit!
I didn't even think. Yeah, you're right. Now that I think about it,
yes, he was.
Brother
Noomsy. I'm sorry.
Now I got to go back and watch that.
That movie's kind of great. That movie's it's one of those like Eddie Murphy.
It was ahead of its time.
Ahead of its time, yeah. And kind of caught everyone off guard.
And no one knew what to make
of it. Because it's all this metaphysical Buddhism and evil versus good, and
all these effects,
and then
jokes.
Eddie Murphy cracking wise.
Yeah,
it's great.
I think I don't think I ever saw it in its entirety.
You have.
I think I've only seen pieces of it.
It's great because It's, well, first of all, Charles Dance plays a great bad guy. Yeah, he plays basically
the
like
devil.
The devil.
Okay.
And Eddie Murphy is basically somebody went, let's take Axel Foley and put him in this kind of sci-fi fantasy land.
Yeah.
And that's basically what he did. And it's great. And there's all these hilarious, because he goes to Nepal and he has to like, you know, you have to drink this water. And he's like, oh, what are you, Monty Hall now? Like, yeah, he's cracking all the... There's a floor here, Monty.
That's the great part of the... I love that Eddie Murphy in his prime era of movies, where just all of those were... Because no matter what you even thought of the film as a whole, Eddie Murphy was always funny.
He was great.
There was nothing...
Because there's all those lines you couldn't ever forget, like, we're not going to fall for the banana on the tailpipe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, my two kids, Monique and Unique. Like, yeah. I could quote his shit all day, and that movie is... It didn't have the breakout of Beverly Hills Cop, but it was
still a fun movie.
It's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and it weirdly still became like a classic.
Yes.
You know, like nobody doesn't know what Golden Child is.
Right.
Like that's, you know.
So anyway, I'm sorry. I interrupted. We went on a Golden Child.
So the Imitation Game. So you did like it. Like what didn't you like about it? Was it the pacing or?
Me falling asleep in the movie, and that was just right away.
Not necessarily the film's fault?
No, it wasn't the film's fault. I just was, as soon as we sat down and the lights got dark, I went, oh, okay. And it's one of those movies that it's not this high action thing, sure. You know, so you better be ready to, you know, I should have
sit
had
and pay attention.
Yeah. So I should have had a Red Bull or something. So I just, that just threw me off for the rest of the movie. I was like, okay, well, I had to sort of figure it out and remind myself, oh, this is happening. You know, the only thing that was weird about the movie, I thought, is by the time you get to the end of the movie, you're not sure what, it's about two things. It's about code breaking, and then it's about this guy, and it's sort of his sexuality comes into play.
Sure, that's the trailer.
And I'm trying not to give away anything, but... So it's about both of these things, but you're not sure which one the movie wants to fall onto. And that was the only thing I was like, well, what was this about? What were we, you know?
Oh, so you think that almost like got in the two storylines kind of got in the way of each
shifted
other a little
focus
bit?
Too much?
Well, I think they meshed them together pretty well, but I still was just like, so what did I... What was I supposed to latch on? Which side of this was I supposed to latch on to? And maybe it works both ways. Maybe that means it's got something for everybody, you know, because the story of his homosexuality and how he deals with that, that's a very, obviously a very dramatic storyline. And the code breaking thing is just this fascinating sort of espionage type of thing. And it's just really interesting to see how they build this machine and how they crack it and what happens. And so it's a very interesting movie. I would recommend it, but I felt bad. I was like, oh no, I've done it again. Where I once fell asleep in Syriana.
Oh, right. That's a movie. If there's any movie you gotta actually watch and pay attention to every scene, it's that movie.
You need to.
And even if you do, you're still gonna go, wait, what?
Yeah, there was so much. But I remember falling asleep in that movie and realizing I'm now a guy who falls asleep in movies after a certain time. But the thing about falling asleep there is I kind of was nodding, and then at one point I heard someone snoring. And I was like, who's snoring up in there? And I realized it was me. I was like, oh. Oh, I'm that guy now. I am.
Oh,
okay.
I'm the problem.
Yeah. I guess I'm just slowly dying. That's this is what I've become. So, but good movie, solid performances.
Do you think he's probably going to get a nod for best actor? Is it? I mean, it's going to be another strong field again this year.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
it is. I didn't. Oh, shit. I don't know because it's weird. He does something. It's at first I'm like, how is this guy not going to be Sherlock in this movie? Because he plays sort of this sort of disconnected person who doesn't really know how to associate with people, and he, you know, he's very
the nerd sort of, genius.
Yeah, and so I'm like, oh, how is he going to even Benedict Cumberbatch? You know, but he manages to walk this line where he's a completely different person, and it's very interesting, and he. He does nail it. I didn't get the instant it's very possible. I would not be surprised if he was nominated for an Oscar. His performance is amazing. But I don't know. I feel like I think he'd be barely just he'd just barely miss the.
Okay.
He's solid, but I have a feeling that they're going to be more people thrown into the pot, but
well, let's talk about one of those movies, the next one that I saw, which
the theory
is
of everything.
The Theory of Everything. Now, this film is about the life of Stephen Hawking, and it's also about his marriage, a lot about his relationship, his marriage, which was played by Felicity Jones.
You know what's always interesting too is when you have a biopic like this, when the person being portrayed is still alive. That's what's always, like, you always wonder, like, well, what does he think of the film? Mm-hmm. Like, because you don't always get that. The biopics, a lot of times, it's someone who's passed away. So, go ahead, Graham. I'm curious to see, hear how this was.
The director, James Marsh, who's done Shadow Dancer, and he did the Man on Wire documentary, and he also did, he did The King. So, this film... Hold on, I'm going to bring it back up on IMDb because there's some stuff I want to talk about. The Theory of Everything, Eddie Redmayne, who really we were introduced to this guy by My Week with Marilyn, which he did a great job playing this sort of, young, nice English kid, which is who he is in this in the beginning. But I think he's going to probably get the front runner because... 3/4 of the movie, he's playing a guy with a physical, like, I was just, as an actor, I was like, man, he's got to contort his body for every fucking scene. You know what I mean? Like, just physically, and he's got to do that thing with his neck. And I'm like, God, that must have just, that right there.
That's a long day on set.
That's a long day on set. And then to do the progression of this illness, he basically has Lou Gehrig's disease, and how it starts out. He's kind of, the movie starts out showing him just sort of fumbling with stuff, and
it collapses. It like that's in the trailer.
That's when that's when they kind of he gets the diagnoses about this, and really it's a slow paced film. Like, rest up, Kevin. This is one of those movies where
put a pot on.
I had to make sure I was awake when I saw this because I was like, wow, okay. You know what I mean? Like, I got to get my shit together for this film.
Yeah.
So it's really intriguing. It's a very slow paced movie, but in terms of performances, Felicity Jones is amazing because she, and it spans their 20 some year, 30 year relationship or something like that. At least 20 years.
Yeah.
So they meet in college, and then he's told you've got 2 years to live, and she's like, I want to marry you anyway, and all this stuff, and she has to. You see the transformation of this young college age woman who's in love with this brilliant scientist, and then the reality of the day to day reality of having to deal with somebody who is confined to a wheelchair,
right.
And that's not easy.
Well, especially after it's like you're there when it's, you got 2 years, and she decides, I'm in for the long haul of 2 years, and then it's not 2 years, and you're like, holy shit, we are still here, and I'm still doing that. Like, that's got to be, that's love.
I know.
But that's got to take its toll.
And that's really what it's about. And then... there also are some cool moments of how he comes up with some of his theories. Mm-hmm. I won't go into the details. I don't want to spoil it, but just cool stuff where he's like, he's thinking of something and he visualizes something and then goes, how he's dealing with that, how he's dealing with the other, he starts out, he's a young PhD candidate at Oxford or Cambridge. I forget. And is that the same place? Sure.
I don't
one
know.
Of the fancy Brit
sure.
colleges,
yeah. Yeah,
one
no.
of the fancy Brit schools, or is Oxford University in Cambridge anyway?
Well, see, you're going to bring us Cambridge. All down with you because now we know. Now everyone Cambridge, knows we don't know either.
No, but there's Cambridge University in the UK as well. There's...
I thought they all just went to college at Hogwarts.
Yeah,
so this is a big castle somewhere.
Yes.
Isn't that how the Brits do it?
That is exactly, yeah. University of Cambridge is in the UK. All right, so I'm going to not sound like such a moron. Anyway, this guy talks a lot of science stuff with his broad, and they have a nice science relationship.
Yeah, in that egghead country.
That, where sure. all the eggheads in Hogwarts live.
Yeah, right? Do they all do magic?
Or just anyway, another Eddie Murphy movie I really liked was...
What is Vampire in Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah.
Classic.
There you go.
So anyway, to see the interaction of a young Stephen Hawking with these, and then progression of him from quirky student to world-renowned genius,
yeah,
and how that relates to their marriage and everything like that is really fascinating. Is this a Best Picture nod? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But I think definitely Best Actor.
Best Performance.
Best Performance for Eddie Redmayne, and I think Felicity Jones might.
For supporting?
I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, she does a pretty... But he for sure has to be on the short list. Because you've got, who else this year? Like Steve Carell and Foxcatcher.
From Nightcrawler, Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you know.
That performance was really good.
That creeped me out, but I was like, hey, great movie. But I didn't want to be alone after that. I needed to hug somebody in the theater.
No, yeah. And the ending, I didn't like the ending. But he is... Like, it gives you shivers how fucking creepy he is in that film.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, I don't know.
Breakout performance, it sounds like.
I got to say breakout actor. Performance, Eddie Redmayne, because mm-hmm. it's just, he's so spot on. And I've watched some stuff with the actual Stephen Hawking and seen him speak and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, that's... And then the acting job when he's virtually catatonic, as he is today, and all he can do is click mm-hmm. with this speech computer, and how he conveys really deep, profound emotions in these scenes in that state was really amazing. Like, it's really amazing.
I mean, that's something that takes deep, deep concentration as an actor, because also remember they're, and you know, I don't know how much they did this, but a lot of times you're shooting these scenes out of sequence.
Right.
So what stage am I today? Mm-hmm. What stage am I now? Where am I, you know, and you have to, it could be very easy to sort of forget
and see which stage of that you're in for the degradation of your body.
Yeah. Like, how do you not, you know, on Tuesday, well, I was like this, and on Thursday, well, now I'm standing. Like, it's just, that takes intense concentration, I'm sure. That dude.
Check the continuity girl's iPad. What was the, check where your arm was, and you know, what, well, you know, yeah. literally for
no,
that,
I mean,
you have to.
That's just from a, you're right, from just a logistics standpoint, not mm-hmm. to mention from an actor standpoint, how do we do this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do we accurately? I was just reading on IMDb that, you know, Eddie Redmayne spent a long time with, he spent 3 hours with Stephen Hawking, and he said maybe 8 sentences, you know, and you know how he prepared for that role, and again, he's not watching. I mean, I'm sure you watch interview footage or whatever, but he actually meets the guy.
Yeah,
you know,
that's what's cool.
And how do you deal with that? So I think I put him on the he's the front runner for me right now.
Yeah,
oh, very cool.
Some other roles might come out, but that's what I would put him in. So
all right. So what should we do? What should we do? Maybe break it up with Nightbreed.
Let's break it up with Nightbreed.
Yeah.
Buddy.
All right. Now I watched this the director's cut. I really wanted to see this because Mark, we got the whole story when Mark came in to talk about this film, and I wanted to
bring anyone up to speed who hasn't.
If you haven't heard what happened with Nightbreed, as you know, this is the famous Clive Barker movie. It was supposed to be the follow-up to Hellraiser. It was a disaster. The studio destroyed it and cut it, and then the footage was lost for many, many years. But Mark Miller got in touch with and basically became friends with Clive Barker, and Clive Barker gave him his blessing to hunt down the footage and try to recut this film, you know, 20-some years later, and couldn't find the footage, was having a lot of trouble, then found a box of VHS tapes in Clive's house that had all the footage on it. So they put together like an extended VHS cut, but it still wasn't, you know, it's nothing they could really release because the footage was so poor quality. So they finally found the footage, in like a warehouse in Ohio, and then they put it together, and it's a completely different movie. I was watching at the beginning because Clive and Mark introduced the film, the recut.
And just real quick, it's episode. If anyone hasn't listened to episode 240 with Mark Allen Miller, and you'll get him telling the whole story.
It's a great story.
It's a fantastic story.
And what they were talking about before the film starts is that how there's actually 40 minutes of new footage in the film, but the film is only 20 minutes longer. So they actually went back and cut out a lot of scenes that didn't make sense, the studio made, that didn't serve the story, and then they added the extra footage. So it's only 20 minutes longer, but it's 40 minutes of new footage. And when I watched it, the first reaction I had is, because Mark had said this before, you know, it is dated. It's an 80s movie. Mm-hmm. And it really almost felt like when you watch an Expendables movie. You're like, oh, it's, you know, 2014, and I'm getting to watch a new 80s action movie. This is what it felt like. It's 2014, and I get to watch a new 80s horror movie because it's all completely new footage.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting story progression. It makes so much more sense now, this film. Like, you could see the actual beginning, middle, and end of the story now that Clive Barker originally anticipated in his vision, but... The other thing that I saw is I could see how the studios, in their very small minds and small thinking, got scared of this movie and didn't know what to make of it. Because what you have is everything's turned on its ear. The monsters are the good guys. They're like the ones that are being hunted. And the ones that are hunting them, it's especially towards the end, it's like a barrage of – it's a bunch of redneck cops. And then for some reason, all of their redneck buddies that ended up, with their pickup trucks and their hunting caps and all of their crazy weapons and automatic weapons.
That's who's hunting monsters?
That's who's hunting the monsters. But that's not all. And then also in the car is a serial killer and a drunk priest. So everything
and
is...
And they walk into a bar.
Sure, of course. That's their first stop.
Turned on its ear. It's amazing to watch. And one of the things, too, I'm watching, I'm like, well, wow, I don't really recognize... any of the actors in this film. Like, nobody really went on to do anything else, except there were two names that I recognized. And when I look back now and watch, it's, like, really interesting. David Cronenberg is the serial killer.
Ooh.
And he, to watch him in this movie, he's absolutely chilling because he plays a psychiatrist. So he speaks in this really soft-spoken tone, and you just want to believe him. Like, yeah, I think everything you're saying makes perfect sense. And then he goes, you know, he kills families, and it's horrible.
Wait, the director?
Yes, the director, David Cronenberg.
That is so weird to me.
He shows up in movies. He acts in movies.
That's weird.
Yeah, he's in it. And then also the music. Danny Elfman did the music.
Of course he did.
The director of History of Violence is in this? Okay, that makes sense.
He plays the serial killer.
That is weird.
David Cronenberg, if you click on actor on him, he does show up in a bunch of movies. He was even in a Nicole Kidman movie, too, for like a couple scenes.
That's so bizarre.
What also is amazing and fantastic about this movie is if you really want to see what old school special effects look like before computer animated graphics, before anything was CG and rendering and all that stuff, you see every effect is practical with the exception of a little bit of animation and like matte paintings. But, you know, it's so dated. You could tell whether it's like drawn in animation or matte paintings. But the practical effects are so elaborate for the monsters. There's elaborate monsters that are literally in one shot. And you never see them again. So it's that kind of... it looked like there was, even more so now as I'm looking at it, the type of budget. It looked like there was a fairly significant budget behind this film because you have all of these practical effects. You have some elaborate scenes. And you have like a lot of pyrotechnics, like as everything kind of gets destroyed towards the end. So you've got all these old school effects because you know none of that was CG'd in. So it was really a fascinating... achievement to actually re-earth this film, recut it, and it was almost like going through. It's like watching a horror time capsule, but to actually see what a director's vision was 20 some years ago and how it was so far ahead of its time and how it just scared the suits senseless.
So, how did you see this?
I saw it on DVD on Blu-ray. And what it is also is there are special screenings. You could find them in festivals if you want to see it on the big screen. I think they're doing a couple other special screenings in certain cities. I think some of them are even fan put together as part of festivals. But if you want to check it out on DVD or Blu-ray, it's available now.
Now, is this in any way... Is it... Was it scary now, and do you think it would have been scary back in the 80s?
You know what? It would have been.
Or is it just scary? Fun to watch?
I think it would have been terrifying back in the 80s. Uh-huh. Although it's more of it's more commentary and violence. It's not like Hellraiser was just a creepy and scary movie, whereas this is more. It's a little more bloody and gory and unsettling, but it's more when you turn everything on its ear, like the monsters have like a code and you've got the redneck hillbillies coming after him. There's a, it's less like, jump in your seat scares as it is just kind of creepy and weird and off-putting in the best possible way. But like all this different stuff, like you could see, Clive Barker created this whole world for this movie. There's like different tiers of monster. There's different levels and there's different codes and there's a mythology behind Midian where all the monsters live and the backstory of just the psychiatrist who's also a serial killer and the drunken priest and there's so much going on in this film and it's just a fun. But don't expect seeing like this. You know, classic great horror movie with great effects of today. It's not, it really is a product of its time. So you have to go in with a sense of nostalgia to actually see it. But this, if you want to see what Clive Barker's original vision was for this film, this is a great thing to see. And it really is fun. So if you're a fan of 80s horror movies and Clive Barker, you're going to love it. If you go in cold, you may not really know what's going on.
See, I think movies like this keep America's love of rednecks alive. I was like, wow, rednecks again. But who else do you want chasing a monster? Guy with a Confederate flag on his car. You know, some
pickup.
Like, we all... I'm sure I talk a lot of shit about rednecks, but I love...
They're the backbone of this country.
They are! what's his face from Walking Dead? What's his name now?
Daryl!
Daryl!
He is awesome.
I want to have a drink with Daryl.
Now, to be fair, he's like a progressive redneck. That's...
Well,
His brother was full redneck.
His brother was full on. But Daryl would have... I mean, Daryl's had to grow up a little bit.
Right.
But I just, like, those guys are fun to hang out with when there are monsters around.
Right.
Yeah. I think that needs to be a condition. Like, I'll hang out with you, but are there going to be some...
going to be monsters.
Because they want to kill something.
Yeah. And it was a love story. This movie was also a love story.
Wow.
It really was.
Get it all in.
It was because it was kind of had those...
And it helps
like
you lose weight.
Romeo and Juliet, where, you know, the lead, he becomes a monster, but the girl doesn't give up on him, follows him into Midian. And it has all these disparate parts to it. And you think, like, well, there's no way this is going to be coherent. And when it first got released, it wasn't, because it was this horrible cut. But now that Clive had a chance to actually recut it, it is coherent, and the way that he plays with all the conventions and turns them around is great. So you really, it's worth your it's worth a viewing.
Can I ask why it's called Nightbreed? What does that refer to?
That refers to the monsters that are called the Nightbreed.
The Nightbreed.
Like,
okay.
You go to Midian, you're a monster, and now you're one of the Nightbreed.
It looks like if you go to realclivebarker.com is where you can find screenings for Nightbreed or buy it. I'm sure you could get the DVD.
Shout Factory. Yeah, it's available on Amazon or whatever. It got re-released.
Okay. All right.
So now, speaking of Nightbreed, let's talk about Horrible Bosses 2.
Kevin, you took one for the team, my friend, by going to see... When you emailed me and said, I've seen The Imitation Game and Horrible Bosses 2, I was like, wow, above and beyond.
Now, awake or asleep?
I was awake for all of it.
Wow.
Man, you really should have slept through this.
Was it anger that kept you awake?
I wanted to like this movie. Here's the thing. I feel like I really liked Horrible Bosses 1. I feel like I'm the only one on the planet.
Yes. Yes, that's correct.
But I remember when it came out, other people liked it too, or were people just lying to my fucking face? Like, that was what...
Were
I don't know what happened.
Saying this at a job interview?
That's what I lead with at an interview. Also, when I eulogize people, just whenever I could throw out my love of Horrible Bosses, I let it out.
Eulogize. You might not know this about Steve, yes, but he loved Horrible Bosses.
Quick antidote. Who saw Horrible Bosses? Well, Jim loved it. Rest his soul. But
it'd be better if you even... Jim never saw it, but man, I loved it. And then you just kind of soapbox your
if
horrible...
If he were alive today, you would want to watch it.
But he's not. He's man. Dead. But thanks, guys.
I enjoyed the first one a lot. And this one, I knew. I was like, well, it could be fun, but I don't... Something... It didn't feel right, and it just felt like there's nothing there. Even just watching the commercial and the trailer, it just felt like, well, there's not much here. And that movie, it did that thing where they try to recapture the thing from the. What made everyone laugh before?
It tried to hang over it.
Yeah, let's just do more of that.
Yeah.
I think it hangovered worse than The Hangover.
Wow.
I can watch all three of the Hangover movies and still go and not want to kill myself. Mm-hmm. This movie, it was annoying first because it was like all the people in it, I like it. Sudeikis, Charlie Day.
Funny people.
They're very funny. I like Bateman. But the Charlie Day, Jason Sudeikis thing, they were way too over the top. Like, I don't remember them all being this dumb.
Right.
It's based on these, you know, it's the story was driven by these guys who sort of, they've got nothing else to do but try to kill their bosses, or so they say, you know. Right. That's the initial premise. This is, I can't believe three people who literally got away with murder. Imagine if you killed somebody and didn't go to jail or get arrested. You wouldn't fucking jaywalk.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, technically, they only killed one of the bosses.
True. Very true.
Alert.
Wow, just blew it for everybody who didn't see it.
Well, the other two were in the trailer.
Yeah.
For the sequel.
Right. Right away, I was like, oh, you're really going to do this again? You're really gonna do this? It's that thing where, like, when you get away with doing something, you want to never do that thing again, or
draw attention to it,
or just any that guilt. I think we all have that guilt in us that's like, I'm staying the way. I was telling somebody, years ago, I was sick, and the first thing I did was get rid of all my porn. For no reason, just like, oh, this got to go. This is probably, I got to get right with God or whatever. The porn did it, you know. And I just got, yeah, I think there's this need to never go near anything you even think is bad again. And I'm watching these guys at the drop of a hat. You know what? Let's just kidnap somebody.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that didn't really, okay. And I could have. It just was too weird and kind of, it didn't make sense. I just couldn't believe they were doing that shit again.
Right, and also, I mean, obviously you talk about it a little bit, you know, you're a comedy writer.
Yeah.
So then you're obviously watching this differently than just someone who... Right? I mean, aren't you watching, like, joke structure and why are they writing that
a
joke?
A little bit, but I can sink right into it and kind of... And I can forgive a lot. I can let a lot go. I mean, like, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it bored me because it was so... They were just being so kind of stupid about the situation.
Right.
The characters were just kind of really, and they were doing that thing where they're constantly talking over each other, and they won't, like, that was the bit, like
Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
A little bit, but I've never watched Always Sunny. I know it's great, but there was just too much of that, like, this routine that they did, and that I felt like worked in the first one. But they just amped it up. Where it got interesting is when they started doing the actual heist. Because I like heist movies, and I think that shit's cool and stuff. And so when they're talking about the plan, and Chris Pine is... Sometimes he's ridiculous to watch, and then sometimes it's fun to watch him.
Right.
Because you're like, that's Kirk. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's Kirk. But hey, put on the uniform. You know, like, I kind of wanted to see that a little bit. But, you know, it's kind of...
You know what his father is? He's an actor from Chips. He was like the police chief.
That's
that dude?
Dad?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Yeah, what's his... I remember that guy. Mm-hmm. Is it Matt Pine?
Every time there would be a car crash, he'd roll your eyes. Oh, Punch.
Yeah, that's his dad.
Yeah.
That's no crazy. Oh, man. I like that guy even more now.
Yeah.
But yeah, the so I was, it didn't drive me out of the theater, but I definitely, I was like, this shit has got to go. Like, it just was, I don't know, it got dull after a while because they were just yelling at each other. And
right.
I kind of enjoy watching Jason Bateman constantly be Jason Bateman in these movies. So that sort of carried me through.
Always Jason.
He's great.
That's entertaining to me, I guess. And like I said, once they got into the plan and this is how we're going to do that, I kind of sat up a little bit and I enjoyed. There's some funny parts. There are definitely funny moments in the movie, but it's so disconnected that you're just kind of like, you come out of it like, well, I didn't need to.
Well, this is and we've mentioned this numerous times on this show, but I wanted to get your take on this. Isn't it so hard to do a comedy sequel?
Yes.
I mean, because like name a great comedy that had a good sequel. Like
it's hard.
It's hard to name.
I mean, you kind of have to go completely back to if you're going to do a comedy sequel, I feel like the problem that comedy sequels have is they're trying to do what they did the previous movie.
Right, and it's no longer fresh.
Yeah, and I think you need to go, well, we like these characters. What can we put them in another? Can we do something else with them different?
Right.
Otherwise,
you're retreading old territory.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done a million things with these guys, but they just said, well, okay, so how are we going to get them
City Slickers? No.
City Slickers was so great that City Slickers 2, I don't, you know.
Again, it's but City Slickers 2 is the thing that Kevin is just talking about, which is they just had him do the same shit again.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't know.
Even Airplane? Even with Captain Kirk?
Well,
it's close.
It's close. I get on the space shuttle.
Airplane 2 had that one moment, though, where, I mean, as a kid seeing this, when William Shatner is talking, they're looking at his face on the monitor. Why hasn't anyone notified me about this? And he opens the door and walks through. I was on the floor.
Oh, yeah, God. That was
great.
That's the one scene everyone remembers. Oh,
yeah, when he
so
would go
shh,
shh, with the door. Like, that was all these inside Star Trek jokes. That was great.
Yeah. But this movie, I wanted to like it, and it just kind of lay there. And, you know, but I don't think anyone was surprised.
No,
I don't think anyone was looking for this movie to be
the poster. I looked at the poster and just went, like, this the movie poster's not funny. The movie poster told me everything that I needed to know about this film. It's the same old bullshit. And then over the top, and like, let's make these characters less realistic.
Yeah.
And less believable.
Yeah, they
make it more wacky.
They dumbed them down a lot.
Yes.
A lot.
And then that was the problem with The Hangover was, you know, the Hangover films,
you
to
have
me,
something that was hyper real, then you made it more hyper real, then all of a sudden you're like, well, I'm not buying it.
Well, now these guys are fucking felons that are just murdering people around Vegas and Mexico. Like, it just didn't. Yeah. And that's what this.
Well, all right. Yeah.
I mean, I will say, I enjoyed Kevin Spacey shows up a couple of times in this movie, and I like when he's there. But it's because you're looking at Kevin Spacey.
Right, and he's
being
always
an asshole, which he's great at.
Yeah, and it was fun to see him not have the Southern accent and wear in the, you know what I mean? Yeah. Not be his character from House of Cards. And
you want to watch Kevin Spacey be a great asshole, watch Swimming with Sharks.
Yeah, that is a great one.
Watch that.
And also one of them where he's a real likable asshole is L.A. Confidential.
He's
really good in that.
Also, Jennifer Aniston, it's not that she's spectacular or anything in this, but I don't know why I have kind of a soft spot for her. I just like seeing her. Oh, look at her guy.
She never ruins a movie.
No.
You're like, that's just Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Doing Jennifer Aniston, which is always kind of funny and cute.
Yeah. She's fun. It's not the worst movie in the world.
She never makes a movie either. never makes a movie, but she never ruins one.
Yeah.
If, you know, she's in all those horrible romantic comedies, her performance is never the thing that you go, oh my God, that's the worst thing about this movie, or the best thing.
I will say the weird thing about this movie is that the people in the theater with me, though, laughing their asses off.
I know.
Yeah.
You always like, some movies like this play on planes, and I'm just like, there's somebody next to me just going,
this is the funniest movie I've ever seen.
I'm just looking at him like, what are you watching?
I mean, I just thought, well, good for them, but I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. I'm not,
All right. Well, moving on, we do have one. We have a sponsor.
Yes, we do. One of my favorite sponsors. What? What are you writing on and trying to tell me?
The time. Because I have to report it to the sponsor.
The time? Oh.
Yeah.
48 minutes. Buddy.
All right. Let's do it. 48 minutes in. Ad read.
48:25 ad read
here.
This is one of my favorite sponsors because I use these guys.
Great products.
I use their razors just not maybe more than a day or two ago. I don't shave every day. I like a little gristle. So this is Harry's.
I like the lived-in look.
I like the lived-in look. The ladies tend to like it. Yeah, that's right, Graham. Oh, late yeah. Night shadow.
wow. It's turned into a smooth jazz staging. Okay.
I am late night shadow.
This product is like a palm strike. To your
to my face, to my 5 o'clock face. Great pitch, Chris. Nice segue. Good movement. So this is Harry's Razors. I love these guys. They got a new thing coming out, Winter Winston, which this is their whole package, which you get the razor, the three blades, and either the shave cream or the gel. I've used both. I go gel. But the cream's not... I've never been a big cream guy, but I do like their cream. Yeah. They got good stuff. And their blades. The blades are the best. Because here's why. Razor blades are crazy expensive. And these come in a lot cheaper than the blades I used to buy.
But they're still good.
They're amazing blades. And they're four of them.
They don't come in like, you know, like, oh, these are cheap blades. No, they're good blades.
I wouldn't shave with them. And we'd tell Harry's go away.
Yeah.
but that's these blades, I like them. And I, my neck gets chewed up very easily and these blades minimize that and it
from shaving.
Yeah. I would assume people would understand that, Chris, because that's what we're talking about. But if you want me to clarify that for people, because I just think that I have
an odd lifestyle. That's what I'm saying. I don't know.
I think that's we all thought that. We also were talking about monsters a little while ago, so who knows if you're trying to bring it back.
So there's some sort of neck parasite that I have to fight.
There's a night breed.
There's a night breed that I deal with when I surf. Yeah. There's aquatic neck parasites, and I shave them off with my Harry's razors, you guys. So
night bee problems, use Harry's razors. Yeah. It's, you know.
Folks, fight off your night breeds with some Harry's shave cream and four blade razors.
Go with the gel.
Gel away the night breeds, guys. So this does make an amazing gift. All right, so anyone out there that needs to buy something for their fella, this is a great gift because especially if they're already using like nice blades, like they use the mocks or whatever,
and they're fighting off monsters,
and they're fighting off neck monsters specifically that attack their necks and chin area. Then get this, and it's $30 for the whole package. You get the razor. It's a nice chrome razor. You get the three blades and the gel or the cream for $30. However, guess what? They've got a coupon code, $5 off, even for returning customers.
Oh, so it's not like a new.
No, sir. And it's the coupon code is Comedy Film Nerds Holiday. Their coupon code's a little nicer than ours.
Yeah, a little bit.
But same function.
They both save money.
Yeah.
So $5 off of $30. That's, you know, that what is that? 20, almost 20% off. That's a pretty good deal. So go to harrysrazors.com, use coupon code ComedyFilmNerdsHoliday, which also, you know, it helps us when you guys, if you are going to buy this and you use our coupon code, it helps us. It lets the sponsor know that you guys...
Their money's well spent.
And
you guys get something cool for cheaper.
They have free shipping if you want to get this for a Christmas gift that ends December 10th. So you got to order by December 10th to get free shipping, and ground shipping ends on the 17th. If you want it to arrive on or before, if you want it to arrive by the 24th or before, If you don't care about that holiday, order away. Do whatever you want to do. But so that's it, guys. Free shipping up till December 10th. Go to harrysrazors.com. Get the Winter Winston. The Winter Winston. And use coupon code. Wait, that sounds like a weird sex act.
Yeah. it's not weird. It's just what some people are into.
Well, yeah. Hello, honey. Let's get the Winter Winston.
The Winter Winston.
All right. Coupon code Comedy Film Nerds Holiday. All right. So, Kevin,
let's talk about your podcast that you just started.
Oh, this sounds great. This is everything that's great about podcasting.
Yeah, it's a new podcast that I just recently started doing with W. Kamau Bell, who late of the Totally Biased with the
which
B.
was
Kamau
a great
Bell
show, and you wrote on that show.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. And he and I used to do an old podcast together called Siskel and Negro. And that it was we talked movies as well. It was a lot of arguing of who was the Siskel and who was the Negro. We just I don't know. We never I say we never settled. He says we did. But anyway, so we hadn't done it in a while, and recently we have a mutual love of Denzel Washington. So we started
How
doing
can you not?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
So does America.
Yeah. So
the world.
Yeah. So our podcast is called Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time, period. And it is a title we managed to squeeze into our little logo thing. But it's all we just talk about we basically our mission is to prove to the world that he is, in fact, the greatest actor of all time, period. And we go through all of his movies in alphabetical order each episode. And yeah, we just talk Denzel theories.
Denzel theories.
Yeah, what's an example of a Denzel theory?
We have, this is changing of late, but we used to have this theory. We haven't talked about this on the podcast yet, but we used to... One thing we noticed, you could tell how good a Denzel movie was going to be by how he was looking at you on the poster. And you could set your watch by it at one point. Like it used to be like if Denzel was looking straight at you or in your direction.
Not going to be good.
No, it was good.
Really?
But Denzel also does those movies where he's looking over the shoulder.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like Training Day and Inside Man.
Well, how is he looking on
American
the Equalizer?
Gangster. He's not looking directly at you.
See, now it's getting weird. Like Equalizer, I can't remember what it looks like, but the Equalizer, some of them there are multiple posters too. Like in the Equalizer, there was one where he was looking at us, and then there was another where he was looking at the over kind of at you, but not quite. And then there was one where he wasn't even looking. It was like a silhouette, and you were like, I don't even see Denzel. So, I mean I think this was with his older movies. So we kind of talk about that a little bit, stuff like that. Our top five Denzel movies are levels of Denzelishness. We're big on how much Denzelishness per Denzel.
What are the two extremes of the chart?
Well, it's elements of Denzelishness. Mm-hmm. So it's like you have the 1,000-yard stare, mm-hmm. you have the walk. That's big.
The Denzel walk. Oh, the walk. That walk with a purpose.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You have the Denzel speech in movies. A good Denzel speech in a movie just. There's the lip.
The Denzel monologue.
Thank you.
Denzel.
I'll write that one down. The Denzel.
Denzalologue.
The Denzonologue.
Denzonologue. Oh, I like that's a thing.
That's a segment now. That's a segment in your show.
Oh my God. Oh, Chris.
That's what we do. We help podcasting flourish.
God love you. But also the one tier. Which is not really a Denz. That's a special. He's only done that in Glory. We call it the Glory tier. But it's one of those things where Denzel gets that.
I want that on a t-shirt.
Well, yeah, I got that one Glory. He just pulls that one Glory tier out, and it's not really. You can't look for that in every Denzel movie. But it's like a comet. Like it came by once, and we're just waiting for it to happen
20
again.
20 years of time. Yeah.
One day he's going to drop that one tier again, and it's going to be a stand up and clap moment in the theater.
So yeah, we just sort of share our feelings about Denzel and what we think and why he our job is to prove, you know, that he is the greatest actor of all time, period. So
how many episodes you guys in?
We are I think the fifth episode drops on Thursday.
How often do you guys do it?
We do weekly.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's just weird because he's in the Bay Area right now, actually, and I'm in New York mostly, so we're doing this remotely. And I think we'll do a couple episodes.
Denzel
lives
in the Bay Area?
Denzel, yeah, you know, Denzel lives in Fremont or something. He's got a big
East Bay?
East Bay guy. He used to live in Oakland.
So you guys, how do you do it? Do you Skype it together? Like
we used to do that, and that got weird. We were doing it, and we didn't know what the hell. Like, you guys have a great setup here. You clearly know what the hell you're doing. We were just like, should we put our computers together? Like, we didn't know what was going on. So Wolfpot, it's the Wolfpot podcast, and so they do all that for us. And it's weird. I go into John Oliver used to do, or I guess he still does occasionally, the Bugle podcast. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about it, but I record in the same studio he used to. And so that's kind of cool. And Kamau's in a studio in Oakland, and they just
through the magic. They put it together.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Great. So through the magic of all
robots.
Of science, robots are a part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, we put it together.
I absolutely love this idea, and you guys got to build it up because we got to have it in the festival.
We'd love to.
Guests, you could Skype us in.
Oh, dude.
Yeah, happily. We're definitely, we started off, we're kind of starting just the two of us right now, but we're going to start doing some guests very soon.
To talk about Denzel movies.
Oh, holy shit.
I can imagine.
I'm jealous that's what you guys get to do every week. It's fun. Denzel movies.
It's fun. We throw to some clips sometimes. And so, it's.
That's great. Well, I want to talk about this a little bit. What has it been like working on the John Oliver show? What is it?
Last Week Tonight,
I've seen a couple episodes of it, and I absolutely love what he's doing. I like Jon Stewart, and I like
Bill Maher.
But for me, sometimes Bill Maher can just be too much of a, you know, liberal.
Angry lefty.
Yeah, angry lefty, preaching to the choir. Jon Stewart has a really cool thing. John Oliver is like really trying to comedically affect change. Like watching the episode with the drones. Yeah. Holy shit. First of all, I'm very against these things. Mm-hmm. It's a thing. And that he came out because the thing that bothers me about politics in America is Obama's is like in support of drones. And I said to all my friends who voted for him, I voted for him. If a Republican president did this, you'd be fucking in the streets going crazy. The Republicans are making us into a war state. But the guy we voted for, so we'll let it slide. Yeah. And it's like bullshit. And the same thing, I remember when Bush got elected, and I said to my Republican friends, if Al Gore would have won the election the way Bush did, you motherfuckers would have gone crazy. Oh, yeah. You would have gone ape shit crazy. Instead, you went, well, the system works. Like, shut up.
Yeah.
So that specific episode was heartbreaking and yet funny. Like that to me, and no one, I don't see anybody else doing that. And so how, like, obviously, and the way John Oliver does it, because it could very easily be, hey, America, you're stupid. I'm a smart Brit. This is why you're so fucking dumb. And that would turn so many people off. But he doesn't. He talks, he says us. He says
and he has American writers.
Yeah. And he's very proud of his citizenship as, I don't know if he's officially an American citizen yet. I know he has a green card, but he might be. I don't. He's
green
proud.
Card, get him the fuck out.
Yeah, he's got to go.
No, but I mean, I really wanted watching that episode, and then when you emailed me, I was like, I can't wait to talk to you, and like they're obviously you've written on a lot of shows, and a big part of this, and a lot of our listeners might not know this. The dynamic and vibe in the writer's room is key to what ends up on the screen. And obviously the host is a big part of it. It's their voice and their vision and their you know, all their comedic abilities. But how is that vibe created?
Well, I mean, first, thank you. It's one of those things where, you know, it's a new show, so we weren't sure what it was. I think we all kind of thought, well, we'll see how this is not going to be the Daily Show. Because mm-hmm. John was very conscious of not wanting to be like the Daily Show, right. Obviously coming straight from there. And I think as writers, we were kind of like, well, we're just going to do what they tell us, and then we'll see what it morphs into. And little by little, it became...
Who is the head writer?
Tim Carvel.
Okay.
Also from The Daily Show.
Okay.
So I think little by little, we put together some top-of-the-show things, and we want to do some bits. And I think we all sort of thought we're going to do like an interview. We're going to have a guest every show. That was just sort of... it felt like that would be sort of a given. Because when you do a show like that, you know, it seems like that, but
when you can get pretty good guests, I mean, both the other shows, you know, Bill Maher,
and you got HBO behind you.
You got HBO behind you. And so you get these, that does what make those two shows great is they get these big name politicians who mm-hmm. normally they're not going to go on Letterman necessarily, no. But they'll come on a show like that, which makes it kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and John wanted to talk to some really interesting, if he talked to somebody he needed to have a thing to ask this person. He didn't want to just, you know,
How's it going?
I would, yeah, I as much as I love Matt Damon, I'm sure he would never be just a random guest on the show plugging his movie or something like that. But I think what slowly started to happen is we were like, well, let's do a thing about, I think the Indian election was the first one was in the first episode, and we're just trying to write like a 6 or 7 minute thing, and it just sort of got a little bit bigger, and so we were like, wow, we have this monster piece in the middle of the show. I guess that's fine. We can do that, right? We got some time. We don't have commercials. And little by little, these pieces got bigger and bigger, and so that sort of became, I think that's the thing that John and the show latched on to, is this is our sort of flagship going in, doing these big pieces. He's not a journalist. He will tell you he's not a journalist. They're not trying to be activists, but
well,
it's just
neither are 90% of the people on cable news channels.
Well, yeah. Yeah. But you know, I mean, you guys know it's the joke first, ultimately, and along with what you're just trying to say, what mm-hmm. you want to, and I think that's really what he's doing. He, you know, like we did the thing about the net neutrality, and after the show aired, the FCC website crashed because we did a bit telling people to go leave comments on the FCC site, you know, telling them we want net neutrality and all this stuff. And so people were sort of like, yeah, he's really trying to make
a thing.
Yeah. And he's not. It's great that that kind of thing happens and he likes that it happens, but he's there to entertain and to go, this is what I know, this is what I'm passionate about, this is what I'm interested in, here, have a look at it. And we have some jokes to go with it, too. And I think that's really the main...
That's the thing I get, you know, from watching that show is, yeah, the joke is first, but I almost feel like he wants to serve you some, like, hey, you need to think about this. And he dresses it up with jokes to mm-hmm. make it a little more palatable.
Yeah.
But I really feel like it's not necessarily joke first. And I don't mean that as a slam. You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah, what you're saying. It's weird. It is a weird line to walk because it's definitely like, I know one thing. He wants to make sure that the shit on that show is airtight. That whatever argument we're putting out there, whatever we're saying,
the research behind
it's behind
it.
You must
have a research department.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
show.
Yeah, we do. And so
unlike the cable news companies,
right? Yeah.
You know.
The propaganda department, not research department.
You guys are doing their best. but I mean, so he wants to make sure, because you're right, sometimes it is, well, this joke doesn't support the point. It's a great joke, but it's got to go. Because the reality is it's this, and so we can't just...
Well, what that does is that creates a very specific and tight voice for the show.
Yeah.
And that's what's, you know, really great about something like that, that, you know, you guys take the time and actually make that a priority, because I think in the long run, that'll serve the show better.
The other thing, too, and I remember when several years ago... for The Daily Show, I remember people in regular media, some survey came out that... most younger people are getting their news from the Daily Show. And I remember seeing the CNNs and the MSNBCs and the Fox people going, oh my God, this is where we're at in society. And I wanted to scream at them, no, no, this is what you've created.
Yeah,
and,
this is your
and
fault.
Jon Stewart is more believable than you motherfuckers are.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I like. And you know,
I always think, too, like if somebody came out with a cable news channel that was just news and actual news, I think it would do very well.
Are you kidding me? It would explode.
Yeah. I think let factcheck.org or one of these nonprofits or PolitiFact, let them create a news channel.
Are you kidding me, man? Because here's the thing. First of all, I'm not surprised that John Oliver is like, make sure this is airtight. Like, no bullshit, no agenda, get the stats on this. The other thing, too, Chris, to your point, when I was in, did this tour through Asia, and I would watch in Hong Kong and Shanghai the English-speaking news channel that was generated over there. And I remember, like, I was there in August when the ISIS thing first happened. You would just see a little graphic, you know, ISIS. It would just say, like, ISIS attack.
Yeah.
Or you know, shooting in Ferguson, because that both those things had just happened when I was over there. And then I come back to the States, and the graphic is ISIS, go attack, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And unrest, Ferguson fight, black, white, blah. And like the graphics that are used here, it's fucking entertainment. It's like
watch
ESPN and watch CNN. It's the same fucking shit, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all trying to make a movie out of what's happened, and it's like, just tell us the story. Tell us what happened.
And you see, like, over, and I would, you know, and you see this, you know, like on the BBC too, like
search for the Malaysian airplane.
Oh yeah, that thing was going on. It was just like, and it was, and then here, like, you watch the, like, some of the new local news posters. I'm like, that looks like a CW show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
These beautiful people, you know, these. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So obviously you guys are going, you're in corp, you know that that's what the mainstream news is. And that's all part, I mean, that's what Jon Stewart has always done, is he's always made fun of that.
Mm-hmm.
So then how are you guys, like, you just sort of said, you're making sure that, like, if the joke doesn't support the actual facts of the story, that you'll pull it or whatever.
Yeah.
What other sort of things are...
I mean, it's really, and it's interesting, just to that, your point, it's sort of ironic that people refer to these shows, whether it's Last Week Tonight or The Daily Show or Colbert, as fake news shows, because I don't think they're fake news shows. They're not fake news shows. They're just shows about the news. Mm-hmm. We're just making jokes about
a fake
news
show
about,
is when you're making up the news.
Yeah, a fake news show, ironically now, is what, like, I feel like what a lot of these... like CNN,
cable
news have become like fake, where they're just sort of propelling shit or making shit up for the sake
propaganda.
Of, you know. You know, I mean, our process is really just to sort of make sure everyone is in the loop. I mean, we spend a lot of time just sitting down with the research department, all the writers, John, you know, the producers, Tim and Liz, and just talking about what... you know, A, what's going on, and then what John or anyone else in that room is passionate about. And sort of, you know, most of our day is spent, or at least the first part of the day is spent, just all of us looking through news and pitching ideas through email. And which is different, like on Totally Biased, we all came up with some ideas, we sat around a room. And I think most writers' rooms are like that. You sit around the room and you're pitching the ideas. But, you know, we take a little bit of time and just sort of throw some things out by email, and John comes in and later says, all right, I like this. This is something we could do later on, and we kind of talk about...
because it's weekly show.
Yeah, it's weekly, which is...
at least it's not a strip show.
It's so nice. It's so... I mean, it's... Man, those Daily Show guys... Like, having done... Totally Biased was a nightly show, our second season, and that shit was difficult. Like that's just hard. We went from a weekly to a nightly, and suddenly just like that, and you know, and what they do at Colbert and Daily Show is amazing. But so it's nice to just be able to kind of breathe a little bit and do the weekly thing. But you know, I mean, we meet a couple times a day sometimes, and just. Suss out what we want to say about a certain thing. It's all about the angle of it and where you want to kind of attack it. What's important to get out there? And it's also, it's ever evolving. And so that it can be frustrating as a writer because you're like, but I had these jokes in here and these were great and I thought this was funny and he liked it. And then, well, we got to cut this out because this is more relevant or we found this out about this thing, you know, and that happens all the time. Right. And so
the facts dictate more of where the jokes are going to go.
Yeah, honestly. Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Well, that's awesome. That's really cool.
That's really
so check
cool,
out
dude.
The show. What's it called again?
It's called Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
On HBO.
John Oliver.
On HBO.
We come back February 8th.
Now, I want to let you guys know, too, if you don't have HBO, HBO is going to actually release HBO Go next year. So you don't need cable. You don't actually need a subscription. You could actually, this is a game changer.
This is great.
You're
going
to be able to get HBO Go on any device.
By cable Netflix?
Yeah, by cable. Like one of the things like you don't even think of, like it's not just even your phone or your iPad. Like you can get an HBO Go app, like I can get it on the PlayStation. That's how we watch Netflix.
Oh, so there you can go.
This is where, I mean, obviously everywhere. Like the sports networks have already started to do this, where you can just get our league on your phone.
Right.
Yeah.
For a monthly blah, 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 or whatever. So
that's coming.
That's huge.
I don't even have HBO yet.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I work for them. And I'm like, oh, I need to.
Well, you've waited them out. You're able to get the app.
Yeah, yeah.
So now let's go to DVDs and Blu-rays released. We're running a little behind, but you know what? So what?
Behind on what?
It's all right.
On what?
On time.
A show that has no time?
Yeah, the show that has time.
We can do whatever we want.
Yep.
There's nothing.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is out. And this was a really fun movie. And we had this discussion with, I think, a couple guests where these Planet of the Apes movies are better than anyone ever thought they could be or that they even had any right to be. And they're great movies.
They're
actually fun. This one was really good, too.
One was like...
It had a lot of cool stuff in it.
All the great social commentary that the original movie
and
was intended
effects,
to.
Great effects. And it's really good.
And the
good.
Motion capture shit?
Yeah, it was really good. The 100-Foot Journey. Now, this is...
I like this.
Have you seen it
yet? Yes, I did see this movie. Mm-hmm. I think I even saw it on a plane. This is Helen Mirren and she runs this like 5-star world renowned restaurant in this small town in France.
Oh yeah, yeah, you did talk about this.
And this family from India comes over.
Yeah.
And it's one of those nice little indie films that just really cool and if you haven't got a chance to see it, I would check it out.
Cool.
It's a good movie.
And I do have one DVD pick for the holidays, Ernest Saves Christmas.
Okay.
There you go.
Explain yourself.
Okay. This is another 80s movie. I was an 80s movie
Santa's
watching
in
mode.
The Slammer.
Yeah, yeah. And it's by no means a good movie at all. There's nothing redeemable about it. But
that's a great pick.
He saves Christmas, for God's sake.
If you have kids... And they have never seen Ernest before. Like, my kids love the movie because it was really, it's a kid's movie. And really, Jim Varney, the character of Ernest, is a kid's character. It's almost like Barney. It's like a redneck Barney. And you watch it and...
Again, rednecks saving the day.
Saving the universe.
And, saving the day.
And you watch this movie, too, and you watch the character. And it, you know, years ago, he died years ago. But you look at this... the progression of an actor and you think, man, that's, you know, you figure out that one thing and run it into the ground where a pile of money is waiting.
Right.
And it really, it's, but if you have kids and they've never seen it, it'll be enjoyable. It's, if you're an adult, skip it.
Full disclosure.
Watch Elf.
I saw Ernest Goes to Camp in the theater.
So did I when as a kid. Absolutely.
But I was trying to see Commando.
Yeah.
And they would not let me in because it was rated R.
What's the famous line from Ernest Goes to Camp?
I don't
know. When he
remember.
Had the turtles?
What is it?
Death from above.
See? That's the goodness you can get with Ernest Saves Christmas.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And he'll, like, you know, he does John Wayne impressions. It's absolutely unwatchable.
Great.
But if you have children, they will enjoy it.
What you want to do, though, that with this guy is go and find him as a serious actor doing so. Because you know though that exists somewhere.
He did some Shakespeare. Absolutely.
What?
Look up Jim Varney and you'll see he actually has a resume as an actor. That's what's so hilarious.
I cannot wait.
Yeah.
This is like getting Shatner's album, The Transformed Man.
Yeah.
Where he does Cyrano de Bergerac and all that.
Oh, man.
So, and coming out this week, we have the movie Wild. Now, this is...
We're in no hurry.
This
is the Reese Witherspoon movie. This is based on actually, I believe, a true story. A woman, Cheryl Strayed. She wrote a memoir, Wild, from Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail. This looks really interesting because it looks...
It's a premise that's been done many times, but it's also an interesting premise where, you know what, done with society, dropping out, going into the wild.
Okay, yeah, this isn't the one where... This is... She takes a long hike. This is not the one with the African kids, right? Remember, she really... There was something coming out with her and some African guys... Kids? They weren't kids. They were like grown men coming to America. And she...
Were they playing baseball?
I don't know what they're doing. I just know Reese Witherspoon.
The John Hamm movie.
Water for Elephants? What are you... Which one are you...
Maybe that's it. I don't know. It just... It came out... Reese, I saw a trailer for it and I was like, oh no, I can't. I can't do that. It was this... It's about this this white lady... And these three African dudes come over to the U.S. and she
are you
has
thinking
to
of coming to America.
No,
the Eddie Murphy movie.
That would be amazing if we all discovered Reese Witherspoon was him coming to America as a grown woman. No, I get this is the hike one where she goes on a
is the hike one.
That looks great,
and I believe it's in America.
Okay, okay, good.
And it reminds us of that Australian movie we saw too, Tracks, where we learned that there's a lot of feral camels. Well, traversing
here's the similarity
of
both these films. They're both based on
real people.
Real people who went, both similar, like women who were kind of floundering in their lives or whatever, and decided, I'm just going to hike across some crazy shit.
I'm going Eat, Pray, Love.
I'm going hardcore Eat, Pray, Love. Not
gonna,
like eat it, not go to Italy,
right,
but
sure.
Backpack.
Going to get your groove back. Mm-hmm. Some people go lounge by a pool. Other people take a long walk.
So Reese gets her groove back in Wild.
Sure.
Now, Chris, you just watched this. You were watching this trailer as I walked in today.
Yes, this is there's not a lot of movies coming out, but there's one indie I want to put on everybody's radar. This is called Zero Motivation, and it's an Israeli film. It's about a unit of female Israeli soldiers at a remote desert base bide their time as they count down the minutes until they can return to civilian life. So it's an Israeli Private Benjamin. So
wait a minute. I do not get a hint of wacky from this description.
No, and I'm looking. It's a comedy. It's a comedy drama. And
what?
Yeah. And we saw the trailer, and I'm like, wow. You know what? I want to see this movie now. I want to see what the perspective is from making this film,
and what
it must be like for the soldiers, because everyone has mandatory
2 years. In Israel.
Yeah, military service.
Oh, that's right.
Everybody.
I'm into this already because if you saw World War Z with Private Benjamin.
Yeah.
the soldier who watches over Brad Pitt. I remember at the end of that movie I was like, I want to see her movie now.
Right.
I want to see what she like that. She was absolutely
Armless
badass.
McGee.
So now, yes, Armless McGee. I believe it was McAfee.
Yeah.
But so I'm all in on this Zero Motivation.
Check it out. I'm sure it'll be on demand or in limited theatrical.
Got it. Well, that's our episode, ladies and gentlemen.
That was a jam-packed episode.
Jam-packed. We went $120 on this one.
Wow.
Nice.
With an ad read.
Wow.
With an ad read. This is like a live episode.
Jesus. Yeah.
This is good.
I'm long-winded.
Yeah, Jesus. Just,
it's very interesting stuff. We didn't know that about John.
Blah, 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 blah. John Oliver, blah, blah. Denzel, blah, blah, blah.
What do you want? You guys, I'm drunk.
Yeah.
I got to go do a eulogy.
Here's another thing about Jennifer Aniston.
You're on the eulogy circuit.
Sure. You know.
Whenever you're out to LA, just pick up, you know, be guests on podcasts and do eulogies.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
It's solid business.
A lot of funerals.
Books those eulogies.
I've got to get a taste of that. All right. Well, that was a great show. Kevin, thank you so much for being on
the show.
Thank you. What do you got coming up? Where can people find you on the internet?
You can follow me. I'm at Kevin Avery on Twitter. Check out Denzel Washington's greatest actor of all time, period.
That's on iTunes, I would assume.
It's on iTunes, yeah. Please subscribe to us. And also, I have a film, it's called Thugs the Musical.
Ooh!
I did this, it's sort of based on a bit from my act, and about being a black guy who auditions for black roles, but is not quite... quote-unquote black enough to get them. And so it's about this black actor who gets frustrated, and he puts on his own play called Thugs the Musical, this really awful play to sort of prove to the world that he can act black. So it's me. It's David Alan Greer is in it. Margaret Cho is in it. Prodigal Son, like from the Wu-Tang family, is in it.
Oh, dude. So wait, you directed this?
I wrote it and produced it. The director is Liam Sullivan, who also directed the Kelly videos. Let me borrow that top and all those. He's great. He's a guy who knows comedy, so he's very funny and great to work with. But the film, it's been out for a little bit, but you can get it if you go to Thugs the Musical.
Is it a short?
It's a 25-minute short.
Okay.
So you can go to thugsthemusical.com and get it, and you could also get the soundtrack on iTunes. It's called Thugs the Musical, the album.
Nice.
And it's me singing a bunch of thuggish show tunes, you know, like Oh No She Didn't, and. Who's that keeping it real? And you know,
so you're fitting a lot into 25 minutes.
Yeah, trying. You know, Break Yourself. That's a fun tune. So great. Yeah,
this reminds me of Hollywood Shuffle.
Yeah, it's
give it a little more of a downtown feel.
That's exactly yeah. So yeah, go to thugsthemusical.com. You could find a link to get the movie. You can get it for a buck. It's a dollar.
Oh, well, you got to spend a dollar, you guys. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Go grab it.
Go grab Thugs the Musical. Yeah. That's awesome. And do you perform much? Are you stand-up still kind of?
Yeah, no, I do perform. Not as much, obviously, because of my schedule. But yeah, I'll be actually at the Punchline in San Francisco on the 29th. The 29th.
Oh, nice.
So come see that show December 29th.
Awesome.
Well, very cool.
Doing the show.
Thanks for reaching out too. I'm glad.
No, thank you for having me. This is great.
Yeah, you hear that, Todd Barry and Nikki Glaser? When you guys come to LA?
Yeah, guys.
So we've this Saturday I'll be headlining in Honolulu, Hawaii, at Hawaiian Brian's
and surfing.
And so yeah, it's a surf trip with a comedy show in it. So, yeah, this Saturday, December 6th, I believe doors open at 7:30. We put links to it on my Facebook and on the Comedy Film Nerds Facebook. And then next week, December 11th, in Oklahoma City, two shows, one Chris and I doing stand-up, and then the Comedy Film Nerds Live podcast. We were just putting together the trailers.
Got some great ones we're going to be showing.
Got some great trailers we're going to show. Johnny Depp will be featured in one of these trailers because we need something to make fun of.
Johnny.
So Johnny. Why, Johnny, why? So check that out. Over just after Christmas, I'll be with Doug Benson in San Diego and Irvine. And then just added this, I'll be doing New Year's Eve at Skyline in Appleton, Wisconsin, New Year's Eve. And then headlining Zanies. I'm headlining the New Year's Eve show, and then headlining the Zanies in downtown Chicago, January 2nd through the 4th.
Cool.
Chris, you got some dates coming up.
I do. Well, we're doing the Oklahoma City show, and then I'll be in Palm Springs and Las Vegas for the Improv in late January, and I'll keep you guys posted on those dates.
Sweet. And as we said, you guys, subscribing to us on iTunes helps get our ratings up. Even if you listen to it some other way, just subscribe.
Or get other people to subscribe.
Get other people to subscribe. And you can listen and then erase it or whatever you need to do, but just subscribe to that shit. All right, that is our episode. Of course, 10% off everything in comedyfilmnerds.com with coupon code I'm a cheap asshole.
Of course.
And say that into the mirror as you type it. God knows we are. So that's our show. Thank you once again to Kevin Avery for coming into the Nerd Garage. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. As always, remember,
Han shot first.
Yeah.